With my heart full of gratitude for everything good in the world, I'll put down my pen. Now, excuse me, I have to go. Satoshi Kon. Byakuya, which is the main theme from the movie Paprika by Susumu Hirasawa. This is the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, episode 52, the last episode of our quote-unquote second season, I guess.
We're like a full series.
I know, my god, we're as long as Full Metal Alchemist. But way better.
Oh yeah.
You can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes, Facebook. We are also on the addnetwork.net, nerdnexus.com, and we're awesome.
So yeah, come download us. We're on awesome.
Anyway, I know that a lot of people are probably thinking, what is the deal? Paprika's not a current anime, so why are you using it as the theme song for the episode?
That's what I'm thinking.
Well, the reason is because recently an unfortunate piece of news swept across the anime industry, and that is that famed director Satoshi Kon passed away from cancer at the age of 46 on Tuesday. So we are making this the Satoshi Kon tribute episode. And with me to celebrate Satoshi Kon are my three co-hosts, Chiaki.
Hi guys.
Hatake.
Hello.
And Kimiko.
Hi everybody.
Yeah.
I know, it's nice that we're all sitting here
together again.
Yep.
We're cuddling.
And,
I wish.
Props to Susumu Hirasawa for working with Kon for so many years. He did the theme song for a lot of Satoshi Kon's anime, including Millennium Actress, Paprika, Paranoia Agent, and, he's got some good stuff going for him. Also did Berserk. Anyway. Which is a good anime, too. And a sequel coming out, or a remake, in the next season. My god, the next season's amazing.
We'll talk about that soon.
Yeah, so we have some new forum members. We have, let's see, six new forum members. Josh, P406, Fuzzy, Pollock, Silence, Zed, Ablo, I don't know, that's a tough name, and Kon Kuro Naisa Haji.
Oh wait, it's Zed Diablo.
Oh.
Oh,
well done,
Zed Diablo.
I decode things.
Yeah, you are a decoder.
Yeah, you do.
Thank Hatake for figuring out your foreign name.
So
we also have a happy belated birthday to the Green Gentleman.
Happy belated birthday.
And another announcement, guest host announcement, and then Hatake is fluttering her hands like she can't contain her excitement.
I can't contain my excitement. We're having J. Michael Tatum and Terry Doty on. On September 19th.
J. Michael
of that
Tatum.
Anime show. Hey, what's up, everybody?
I'm so excited.
What's so important about these people?
Can I take Tatum? Like, to explain?
Excuse me. We're going to have a Tatum fight.
To explain the brilliance, and you can explain the brilliance of Terry. What?
Well, they're on here as hosts of that anime show.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, Tatum is also a brilliant voice actor.
And so Terry's also an awesome director. So they deserve their...
And a voice actor.
And voice actor.
Yeah. So who are these people?
They're the
After you argue for 30 seconds.
We fight over them in our spare time.
That sounds creepy.
No, we don't. I'm just kidding.
J. Michael Tatum, most of you will know him as a prominent voice actor from Funimation. He's done the voice of Kyoya from Ouran and Isaac from Bakugo and
a lot of others. He was Dororo in Sergeant Frog.
Yes.
And Age in Heroic Age.
And Lan in Ghost Hunt and so many others. And he is also one of the hosts of that anime show. And he is a fantastic, fantastic man, and we are excited to have him. And
Terry, come on. Terry's the coolest person ever. That's the end.
Oh,
Terry's the coolest person ever.
Okay.
So we are going to have the coolest person ever on our podcast.
We are.
And then J. Michael Tatum.
That's episode 55, by the way. So, also, it seems that this is the Green Gentleman's lucky episode because while the cool name won the trivia for last week, Green Gentleman was lucky enough and fortunate enough to win the trivia for the overall month of August.
It's like a birthday present.
Yeah, it is like a birthday present. Happy birthday. The new question is up. I am starting a new round. Last round was my edited picture where I edited the picture and you had to figure out what it was based on my edit. This round, it's going to be my distortion pictures, where I'm going to change the color or adjust the brightness or something, and you're going to have to look at the picture and figure out what it is and what's been distorted. Well, you don't have to say what's been distorted, but...
There was already some good feedback on the forum from that. They were like, damn, that was tricky, but I got it.
See? That's what I like to hear.
Anyway, so, just one more thing before we get started. Next week is technically the third season opener of our podcast, and while not much will change, we did buy a mixer recently.
Yay!
So, you will, in either the next episode or the following episode, start to see mixer-ish sound qualities. So, that should be good for you people that listen and have ears, you know. And, I'm gonna try to put more music in the episodes, maybe put some light music from whatever anime we're reviewing in the background.
Some light music. Mood music.
You know, some mood music. You can play our podcast while you're getting down with your honey.
That's really awkward.
Actually, not. If you do that, I really do want to know. Like, I really do.
It's like Al Green.
What?
Silence.
Who?
If this was the next episode, this is where I would play the cricket noises. Anyway, and as you can already tell, we are going to continue to bring you guys great voice actors and media guests.
Duh.
Anyway, so the podcast agenda. We are going to make this a full Satoshi Kon episode, so you guys will love Satoshi Kon, whether you want to or not, by the end of this episode. Not that you should have a reason not to love him. Why don't we get started by starting at the beginning and talking about the early life and the career of Satoshi Kon?
Well, Satoshi Kon was born in Hokkaido, Japan. And he really, like, he started out his career actually by intending to become a painter.
I think it's kind of interesting. Which makes sense, considering you gotta start in manga.
Right, but, you know, with the industry being over in Japan, many people can actually focus on classes and things like that to become an animator, whereas becoming a painter is more fine art. And I think you can kind of see it in his art style, too, because he has a very realistic, I'd say, style to him.
By the way,
definitely. Lots of detail.
Yeah, the faces and mm-hmm. the backgrounds are wonderful. And by the way, the college was called Musashino College of the Arts.
So, he started out doing that. And as Mitsugi said, he followed up by starting work on the manga World Apartment Horror, which I've never heard of.
With Katsuhiro Otomo, who is the director of Akira, in case people don't know that name, but you should.
So he kind of got started with a good person.
It says here that he got his start in the anime industry by working as a set designer for Rogen Z. I don't know how many people out there have seen Rogen Z. I have seen it, But that anime is friggin' weird. It's got, like, old people in it, and it's, like, a nursing home setting for part of it. It's a sci-fi movie, but there's a scene where, like, he's like, I can't remember the girl's name, but I'm gonna call her Michiko just for the shit of it. He's like, Michiko, I wet my bed again.
Oh my god.
It's like the funniest thing I've ever heard in an anime in my life. But, Katsuhiro Otomo is the scriptwriter, and he's the screenwriter and mechanical designer for Erosion Z, so. But, I guess you could kind of say that Cohn's early work was influenced by Otomo in a way. But,
well, you can see that too, because he would always, like, he viewed himself as being an odd person. He didn't view himself as being normal or taking the easy route or taking the route which people most expected of him.
Well, it doesn't really stop there. The first big role that Satoshi Kon had was Magnetic Rose, which is part of the Memories trilogy that guess what, Katsuhiro Otomo also directs. And that movie is amazing. I think I've talked about it before. But Magnetic Rose is a really, really amazing film. He was the screenwriter for that. So I didn't know that until today. But
that film is astounding. And if you
really,
haven't seen
really
it,
good.
You need to go see it. So
it's a spooky movie, too. It's kind of cool.
Spooky?
Spooky. It's a horror movie.
Yeah. Oh.
It's about some garbage collector people in space, and they get a distress signal. And it's maritime law that you have to answer distress signals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to this space station. And by the way, the movie, the entire soundtrack of the movie is Madame Butterfly.
But then
I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah.
They adjust it, and they make Madame Butterfly sound so eerie.
Yeah, in the distress signal, it loops like the beginning, but it's all scrambled, and it sounds really freaking creepy, like nightmare creepy.
Oh my god, it really does.
Yeah, and then like, because the girl who owns the space station is an opera singer.
Yeah.
But anyway, but I guess that's a talk for another time. But,
so after Satoshi Kon got his start, you know, automatically being surrounded by very influential figures in the anime industry.
Right.
Having this strong fine arts background, which really, as we said, affected his style later on in life. He became a director himself.
Oh, yeah.
As well he should.
And his debut film is actually the one that Kimiko and Hatsuke are going to review later.
Perfect Blue.
Perfect Blue.
Dun 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 dun.
Exactly.
And it was good. It's a good movie, right? Did you guys like it?
It was really good.
I really liked it. It was a giant mind. But I really liked it.
I mean, going from the perspective that's a director's debut film, I know you're going to do a review on it later, so not necessarily going into the world of review,
of course.
But, you know, looking at it as his first film, like, what would you think of it?
Mind-blowing.
Like, oh, it takes a brilliant mind to come up with something like that for your debut film. It was incredibly well thought out. It really was.
It's kind of funny. If you think about the stuff that he's done, Paprika was a mic too, big time. More so than Perfect Blue.
Yeah.
But that movie, Millennium Actress has a very fast pace that really takes your that requires you to pay attention while you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody who's seen.
But even then, at the end, it starts to get a little bit trippy.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yes. And Paranoia Agent, the series. Anybody who's seen that knows that anime is like a PhD worthy anime. You gotta study it for 3 years.
Rivals
Utena. So you could say that Satoshi Kon really liked to have psychological themes in his animes.
Right.
They were it's a reoccurring theme. It is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and
it's
many
like,
many directors. Like the first one that comes to mind is Mamoru Oshii. Many directors from this kind of era have this opinion or this thought of their work of. It's not necessarily about making work for the masses or producing films that are going to please everyone who picks them up, but producing films that people are actually going to have to sit, stop, and spend time with and look at and think about rather than producing a film that's going to be a cookie cutter thing that's going to draw people in. I mean, Oshii said that himself.
I like cookies.
Do you?
Well, I'm sorry, P90X diet.
Yeah. P90X diet.
Oh. All of us.
By the way, the four hosts of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast are now all doing P90X together.
And we're kicking ass.
I'm the trainer.
Yeah.
Because I'm like Rocky, literally.
You can talk to us on the forums about it.
He's
but anyways.
A beast.
But many directors, including Oshii, will like flat out say, I'm not interested in making these work for the masses. I want to make work that people enjoy. And I say the same in Satoshi Kon, because he's not creating films that everyone is going to love.
No, God no. There are going to be plenty of people who would absolutely despise Perfect Blue.
Especially with the graphic rape scene in it.
Graphic rape scene, graphic stabbings. Violence. Yeah. I never thought that violence could actually, like from an anime, could actually make me feel, like,
well, yeah,
uncomfortable.
I mean, it was watching something and seeing people react so, like, realistically. Instead of, like, you know, people get, you know, like, punched in the face and stuff and stabbed.
That's probably his key.
People stab right back.
I have to say, yeah, you guys have hit on something else that really defines him as a director. He invokes so much emotion in his films.
And realism. Like, straight up realism.
Millennium Actress will give you that eerie chill down your spine. Perfect Blue, you have that, you know, true kind of horror and fear and, like, psychological, supernatural, what the hell is going on. You know, Tokyo Godfathers, you fall in love with the characters. You adore them. Millennium Actress, you laugh, you cry. Like, you get so enveloped in these emotions that it... I don't see how people can't enjoy them. I know they can't, but...
And,
what about Paprika? Was Paprika like that?
Paprika was a very difficult movie to understand.
But did it wrap you up in, like, emotions? Surrounding the characters? And
not
quite
realistic. Not so much. We'll talk about it later.
There's always one.
There are things to be said. But, I don't know. I think his best film is Millennium Actress. And if you look at the list of awards that Satoshi Kon's been nominated for has won...
He's won 15 awards and nominated for four, and has been nominated for four more.
Wow.
Six of them are from Millennium Actress. But Tokyo Godfathers actually has a lot of awards on here. There's five awards for Tokyo Godfathers, but I mean, some of the awards that he's won, or he was nominated for an award at the Venice Film Festival. That's probably the biggest one I see on here in terms of films. Newport Beach Film Festival, winner of that. There's a lot of film festivals on here that he's won awards in.
Montreal Festival of New Cinema I saw on there.
Yeah. And Fanta Asia Film Festival. There's a lot of good stuff here. So Satoshi Kon definitely has his fair share of acclaim, and his films, they're all good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
That's probably, I mean, I figure maybe we should have started with this, but you might be saying, oh, people have died in the anime industry before, and you've never dedicated an episode to them, but, I mean, I think, aside from the fact that it was a sudden death, that it was a young death, but the fact that he hasn't made something bad. I mean, even if you don't like his film, you can't say it's shit.
No. Because
it isn't.
Yeah.
Hardly. I don't know if I'm technically allowed to say this, but I can pretty much guarantee, in a similar sense of just being consistently good, we will have another full memorial episode dedicated to Miyazaki.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yeah,
I don't even want to think about it,
but that's, you know, the people...
The kind, the caliber of people.
Yeah, not saying other people don't deserve it, but the ones who just deserve it so much you can't help but want to talk about it.
It's funny you mention that, because there are some similarities between Satoshi Kon and Miyazaki. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Miyazaki's much older. He's done many more films, as I'm sure Kon would have also. But this is a big blow for Studio Madhouse.
Right.
Satoshi Kon made every single one of his films with Madhouse Studios. And he was very close to Maruo Masayama, and...
Who's Maruo Masayama?
The founder of Madhouse.
Well, just for anyone who might not know.
Were you with us at Otakon the year when Masayama...
No,
came?
I wasn't. That was one of the years I didn't make it.
He's been making it a habit now.
Really?
I think it's now been 2 years in a row that he's come to Otakon.
So we're gonna meet him.
And they always bring cool stuff that's like new unseen trailers, and they make announcements that for the first time, and it's good stuff.
I can't wait.
But I mean, this is a big blow for Madhouse, and They've written messages about his death to the public. Satoshi Kon, the director of numerous works at Madhouse, including Paprika, Paranoid Agent, Tokyo Godfathers, and Millennium Actress, passed away due to pancreatic cancer. I'm not sure when they had his funeral service, but you know, they're really thankful and grateful for all the kindness during his lifetime. And Madhouse is, I don't know, I feel like they really loved him as a director and valued him as a talent.
I mean, and he's kind of, I always viewed Madhouse as the high production value, yet slightly quirky studio, mm-hmm. personally, just by my opinion of what they put out. And Satoshi Kon definitely fits in with that.
There's also another film that is kind of unfinished that he was working on called Dream Machine, I think. And that's kind of another point I wanted to bring up is that I think a lot of his movies have to do with either memories or dreams. If you think about it, Paprika is definitely dreams. Now there's this other one, Dream Machine.
Mental states,
psychological. Millennium Mattress is all memories.
Perfect Blue is all one giant mental state.
Yeah.
You know?
So he really likes to attach his stories to these types of themes. And
as far as Dream Machine goes, I think that it will be released. And by my understanding of what I've read, at least, is that it has been completed enough that they should be able to finish the film and release it, and that will be our last Satoshi Kon film.
There's a comment by Masao Maruyama, the founder of Madhouse, regarding the final anime film he was directing. And the quote says, "When I conveyed my concerns for Yume Miru Kikai to Mr. Maruyama," and this is from the final statement from Satoshi Kon, whom we will read later. He said that Maruyama said that it's fine, don't worry, we'll do whatever it takes to get the movie done. So,
well done.
I think we can all enjoy, you know, celebrate Satoshi Kon for one last film.
In memory of.
Yeah, this is kind of like Heath Ledger type of stuff. You know what I mean?
The Imaginarium of Mr. Parnassus.
I think, where
Jude Law and Johnny Depp kind of came in to help finish what he couldn't have acted before he left before he died.
Yeah.
But making sure that it just gets done for him at the very least.
And for his fans, I mean, he's got to have a close-knit network of fans. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to this that are Satoshi Kon fans without even realizing it, because I kind of was. I mean, it was like when I heard he had passed, I was like, oh, I like one or two of his films. And then I realized I liked every one of his films, at least of the ones that I had seen.
Hell, I was a fan by association. All of the people that had told me, Tokyo Godfather is the greatest movie, you have to see it, just like for years, you know? And I would always associate that with it being a brilliant movie, even though I'd never seen it.
Well, that movie's hilarious. I mean, one of my favorite moments of any of his films is just the random crazy shit that the drag queen homeless person in that movie does.
Yeah.
He just has, like, these crazy, like, fits where he just gets... He's like, you know, he tries to be prim and proper and be a lady, you know, because he's a drag queen. Mm-hmm. But he just gets angry, and you can see, like, the man come out in him. It's just so funny.
I love... I mean, one of my favorite moments from Satoshi Kon's work is... I mean, I have to say, honestly, it's probably one from Paranoia Agent. I mean, I love all of his movies, but just to pick something different. You know, that iconic scene of Little Slugger on his rollerblades rolling up. And I think there's one scene, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's going up and it's like a car or something like that. And it's one of those impossible scenes where he's couldn't be really there,
mm-hmm.
but like they think he's there. And I apologize if I'm remembering it incorrectly and there's some, you know, Paranoia Agent fan out there going, you are so stupid! But, like, just that iconic image of, you know, the little slugger and that, like, right before, you know, as he's raising his bat to swing and just that whole fear throughout that whole series.
I didn't realize that was Paranoia Agent.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
What's the deal with the car?
Like, not all of it, but...
Well, he was just kind of, like, chasing the car on his rollerblades.
Oh, okay.
And it was one of, like I said, it was one of those things where there's no way he could have physically been chasing the car on his rollerblades, but...
So you've actually seen Paranoia Agent?
I haven't seen all of it, like, at all, but I've actually seen it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't watch it. It was just so, like...
It's so creepy.
Creepy, yeah.
That I saw maybe 4 or 5 episodes,
and that little
was like, this
pink...
just genuinely terrifies me.
That little pink dog bunny thing is just the weirdest thing ever.
Wait, what's it called? Mom, I can't, it starts with an M. But, yeah, and the creepiest thing to me is Little Slugger dragging the bat. Like, the sound of the bat being dragged.
It was just the the entire like, image of him.
He makes such good atmospheres in his work. Or he did make such good atmospheres.
This looks amazing.
What?
Paranoid Agent.
Well, it's...
That thing, I've seen that.
As we establish, it's a mine. But, it is a very scary, yet enjoyable one.
Yeah. Anyway, so, I was thinking that we could maybe read the last statement from Satoshi Kon so that everybody who's listening can hear his message.
Last one to the world.
His last message to the world. And since it kind of, we can kind of divide it into four sections, so we're going to round robin on this. And so Chiaki's going to get started, and she's going to read it for you guys, and then we're gonna round robin on it until we get to the end. So everybody listen up.
Sayonara, goodbye, is the title. How could I forget? May 18th of this year, I received the following pronouncement from a cardiovascular doctor at Musashino Red Cross Hospital. It's the latter stages of pancreatic cancer. It's metastasized to several bones. You have, at the most, half a year to live. My wife and I listened together. It was a fate so unexpected and untenable that the two of us together could barely take it. I used to honestly think that I can't help it if I die any day. Still, it was so sudden. To be sure, there were some signs. 2 to 3 months before that, I had strong pains in several places, on my back and in the joints of my legs. I'd lost strength in my right leg and found it hard to walk, and I'd been going to an acupuncturist and a chiropractor, but it wasn't getting any better. So after having been examined by an MRI and a PET-CT, and such advanced machinery, came the sudden pronouncement of the time I had left. It was as if death had been positioned itself right behind me before I knew it, and there was nothing I could do. After the pronouncement, my wife and I researched ways to prolong my life. It was literally a life or death situation. We received support from the staunch friends and strong allies. I rejected anti-cancer medication and tried to live with a view of the world slightly different from the norm. The fact that I rejected what was expected or normal seemed to me very much like me. I wanted to die at home. I might inconvenience the people around me, but I asked them to see how I could escape and go back home. I was able to do so thanks to my wife's efforts. The hospital's cooperation, despite their position of having given up on me, the tremendous help of other medical facilities, and the coincidences that were so numerous that they only seemed to be gifts from heaven. I'd never seen so many coincidences and events falling into place so neatly in real life. I could barely believe it. This wasn't Tokyo Godfathers, after all.
To be truthful, I'd only told the people closest to me about the cancer. I hadn't even told my parents. In particular, because of various work-related complications, I couldn't say anything, even if I wanted to. I wanted to announce my cancer on the internet and report on my remaining life, but if Satoshi's death was scheduled, there might be some waves made, however small. For these reasons, I acted very irresponsibly to people dear to me. I am so sorry. There were so many people that I wanted to see before I died, to say even one word of greeting to. Family and relatives, old friends and classmates from elementary and middle and high school, the mates I met in college, the people I met in the manga world with whom I exchanged so much inspiration, the people in the anime world whose desks I sat next to, when drinking with whom I competed on the same works, the mates with whom I shared good and bad times, the countless people I was able to know because of my position as a film director, the people who call themselves my fans, not only in Japan, but around the world, the friends I'd made via the web. There are so many people that I want to see at least once. Well, there are some I don't want to see, too. But if I see them, I'm afraid that the thought that I can never see this person again will take me over, and that I wouldn't be able to greet death gracefully. Even if I had recovered, I had very little life force left, and it took a lot of effort to see people. The more people wanted to see me, the harder it was for me to see them. What irony. In addition, my lower body was paralyzed due to the cancer spreading to my bones, and I was prone on my bed, and I didn't want people to see my emaciated body. I wanted most of the people I knew to remember me as the Satoshi that was full of life. I'd like to use the space to apologize to my relatives, friends, and acquaintances for not telling you about my cancer, for my irresponsibility. Please understand that this was Satoshi's selfish desire. I mean, Satoshi Kon was that kind of guy.
When I envision your faces, I only have good memories and remember your great smiles. Everyone, thank you for all the truly great memories. I love the world I lived in. Just the fact that I can think that makes me happy.
My biggest regret is the film Dreaming Machine. I'm worried not only about the film itself, but the staff who I was able to work with on the film. After all, there's a strong possibility that the storyboards that were created by our blood, sweat, and tears will never be seen. This is because Satoshi Kon put his arms around the original story, the script, the characters and the settings, the sketches, the music, every single image. Of course, there are things that I shared with the animation director, the art director, and other staff, but basically, most of the work can only be understood by Satoshi Kon. It's easy to say that it was my fault for arranging things this way, but from my point of view, I made every effort to share my vision with others. However, in my current state, I can only feel deep remorse for my inadequacies in these areas. I am really sorry to all of the staff. However, I want them to understand, if only a little bit. Satoshi Kon was that kind of a guy. And that's why he was able to make rather weird anime that was a bit different. I know this is a selfish excuse, but think of my cancer and please forgive me. I haven't been idly waiting for death. Even now I'm thinking with my weak brain of ways to let the work live even after I'm gone. But they are all shallow ideas. When I told Maruyama-san about my concerns about Dreaming Machine, he just said, "Don't worry, we'll figure out something, so don't worry." I wept. I wept uncontrollably. Even with my previous movies, I've been so irresponsible with the productions and the budgets, but I always had Maruyama-san figure it out for me in the end. This time is no different. I really haven't changed. I was able to talk to my heart's content with Maruyama-san. Thanks to this, I was able to feel, at least a little, that Satoshi Kon's talents and skills were some value in our industry. I regret losing your talent. I wish that you were able to leave it for us. If Madhouse's Maruyama-san says that I can go to the netherworld with a little bit of self-pride after all. And of course, even without anyone else telling me this, I do feel regret that my weird visions and ability to draw things in minute detail will be lost. But that can't be helped. I am grateful from the bottom of my heart that Maruyama-san gave me the opportunity to show the world these things. Thank you so very much. Satoshi Kon was happy as an animation director.
And this is really the last, but from shortly after I received the pronouncement in mid-May until now, I've been lucky to have the cooperation, help, and mental support both personally and in business from two friends, my friend T, who has been a friend since high school and is a member of Konstone Inc., and producer H. I thank you both from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. It's hard for me and my measly vocabulary to express my gratitude adequately to you both. My wife and I have both received so much from you. If you two hadn't been there for us, I'm sure that I'd be anticipating death while looking at my wife here as she sits by my side with considerably more trepidation and worry. I am really in your debt, and if I may ask one more thing, could you help my wife send me over to the other side after my death? I'd be able to get on that flight with my mind at rest if you could do that for me. I'd ask this from my heart. So to everyone who stuck with me through this long document, thank you. With my heart full of gratitude for everything good in the world, I'll put down my pen. Now, excuse me, I have to go. Satoshi Kon. I think Kimiko's tearing up.
I know I am.
Just a little bit.
Great, now I'm gonna cry now.
Well, I don't think there's much more that can be said other than honoring his life and honoring his work and looking at least his form films, the ones that we are graced with, in more in-depth and reviewing them. So, in light of the emotions and in light of the occasion, giving things a score seems
tasteless.
Well, we all agreed it is tasteless. That's a good word.
Yeah.
So we are going to review these anime for the sake of reviewing them so that more people can find his work and not give it a score, but hopefully you can tell by what we have to say, you know, what you think and if you might want to watch it. So do you want to start off with the best or do you want to save the best for last, Mitsuki?
Well, why don't we just go right down the list we have the way that we have it written?
Okay. I say it's the best because I do kind of think that this is probably Satoshi Kon's, you know, best film. Every fleet has a flagship, And if Satoshi Kon's collection of films was a fleet, I would say this would be his flagship, and that is Millennium Actress. Millennium Actress came out in 2001. It's 87 minutes, which seems so much longer in a good way when you're actually watching the movie.
Really? I think it goes like lightning fast.
Oh, see, I think it's fast paced, but I think it seems longer because the story is basically a studio commissions another filmmaker to make a documentary.
Genya Tachibana.
In commemoration of its 70th anniversary. And it starts out with him going out to this secluded mountain lodge to interview the idol of his youth. And that is Chiyoko Fujiwara. And it's the studio's leading lady from the 1930s until the 1960s.
Right. Famous actress.
Very famous actress. And Chiyoko grants them the interview. And as she starts to tell the story of her life, it kind of flashes back. And the story of her life is told through all the roles that she's played.
I just want to say that it kind of does remind me a little bit of the Titanic movie. Because it's interviewers talking to an old lady about her life, and then they go back while she's telling the story.
I can see that.
Except
this is actually better than the Titanic movie.
Except for there's no big ship, and there's no, you know, heart of the ocean.
But the formula of it.
Yes.
The formula
of it. but it's very cool because, like I said, as she's going through and she's giving, you know, telling the story of her life, it flashes back to the movie she's done. So it's like, it's still telling her life, but the scenery changes and the costume changes with every, you know, different arc, quote-unquote, of her life. You know, growing up as a child,
right.
Reaching adolescence, falling in love for the first time, getting married, and things like that.
There's so many roles just in this picture from Anime News Network. The photo has her as a nurse. She's an astronaut in the movie. She plays the role of a princess. One of my favorites is the, and in every scene, the interviewer, Genya, he's also in each scene, and he basically plays a role, too.
Right.
And, actually, I take it back, earlier when I said my favorite moment was with the drag queen, I think my favorite moment is probably from this movie. I really love the scene where the painter gives Chiyoko the key, remember the key?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very symbolic, but she harbors he's a criminal, I think, but he's also a painter, and he paints while he's in hiding. And when he leaves, he gives her this key that he had. But just the way that the movie, the pacing of the movie is incredible.
Oh, it's incredible! Like I said, it feels longer because it's almost like you're watching like a bunch of little scenes all put together. Not to say that they don't flow well together, but it just seems longer because you feel like you've seen so much more. But that's not to say the pacing isn't good, because the pacing in this movie is fantastic.
But and needless to say, Studio Madhouse puts together an amazing display of animation.
Of course.
And voice acting talent that, you know, that perhaps only they can do in their own way. So Satoshi Kon lends his own art style to the film, and it's a style that you see throughout all of his movies.
And you can tell that by, literally, he had his hand almost in everything in this. He was the director, he wrote the screenplay along with another person, came up with the original story. He was involved in the character design. I mean, really, he was just all over this movie. So it screams a Satoshi Kon, and it's just a fantastic story. And fantastic pacing, great movie.
Well, Millennium Actress, I've been saying it for years. I think it's one of the best animated films that anime has ever produced in its whole. I mean, it slips in there nicely with all the Ghibli movies.
It does. So, I think we can round it out there nicely, because that is quite high praise there and of itself, of this review on Millennium Actress.
Anyway, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about Perfect Blue, because I watched it my first time in college. You know, back when I was young and not old.
So Perfect Blue is pretty much the story of a pop idol named Mima, who She's all like successful and happy in her pop group, except not really, because she has to she quits her job as a pop idol to pursue an acting career. And she doesn't really seem happy with it.
She doesn't really seem happy with
anything.
She seems lost.
She seems very lost. Yes, and she's just trying to find herself and find happiness, and then
it doesn't
help. Goes downhill.
It doesn't help that she's got an agent who's trying to make sure that she becomes a hit in the business no matter what, including getting her first major role as one where it starts off and leads throughout as her being raped.
Yes.
And because she wants to be an actress, or at the very least wants to prove that she can be an actress.
She doesn't want to let down the people that she loves that has worked so hard.
I think on some level she doesn't want to let herself down either. Yeah. Because she dropped what she quote-unquote loved in order to do this, and if she admitted that she didn't want it anymore, then she will have lost what she did.
Very true, very true.
But, she agrees to it, and I think from there, you're right, it does spiral out of control.
A little bit out of control, yeah. Things get pretty serious business, and, stalker is involved.
Can we just say that the creepy guy, from the beginning, like, creepy guy?
He is, like, and Kimiko actually said when we were watching, was it you that said that they don't around?
Oh no,
that was Chiaki.
And they don't screw around with this. They tell you right straightforward, this is the creepy guy, this is the stalker, and this is how it's going down.
We're not hiding that this guy is the creeper. He looks like a creeper and he is a creeper.
Which I think is why I'm not going to try to give anything away, because I think people should see this and should experience this for themselves, because I've never seen this
definitely.
Movie. Or I had never seen it until today, and I was completely blown away by the end of this movie. But I think it's being that straightforward that makes the twists
the plot
at the
twist.
End
yeah, so unexpected.
So incredible. But yeah, you've got stalkers, you've got murders, you've got Mima going insane. Legit going insane.
Yeah, the whole movie is about her going insane.
Oh yeah.
Just slowly progressing.
One giant mind. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, people have heard so many moans at this point in the episode.
Suddenly it's a hentai podcast. What?
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to say, we watched it in Japanese. So for the first time, I think in a very long time in the podcast, we don't know how this dub is.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So, we don't know. We haven't watched the dub.
But you guys were commenting, though, I remember when you were watching it, saying that it would have to be, like, to pull it off, phenomenal dub.
There are blood-curdling screams. I mean, for the rape scene alone, Mima is screaming in fear, you know? It would have to be done, like, I don't know if any of you, after listening to Hatake's review on Rin, Daughters of the Masne, actually went and watched it.
Oh,
but
Colleen.
Colleen's voice acting throughout that entire series was just spot on and so real and so full of emotion. That's the sort of thing you need. That's the sort of thing you need for Perfect Blue. And there are a couple of voice actors in the English cast.
Yeah, Wendy Lee is very, very talented.
Yeah.
But we don't know. So
I haven't heard of half of them. So
yeah, considering it's so old too, you know, I doubt that it would be up to the standards that the Japanese voice actors have acted in. But I think the voice acting in Japanese was
spectacular,
spot on.
I'm actually interested to see the dub just to see.
Yeah, just
it might be interesting.
Oh, and the music.
Oh my gosh. Okay, like if you watch this movie, you will have the theme stuck in your head and you're probably not gonna be able to sleep. So the
it's
music that
on.
You're currently hearing in the background,
creepy. Very creepy.
It's creepy doesn't even begin to it starts to make you just get lost and
But
confused.
Anyway, I would recommend this to anybody who likes psychological thrillers of this sort, who isn't bothered by graphic scenes like rape and murder, and who genuinely likes something that makes them think. It's a very good, how do you describe it? Like, finding yourself?
Oh, yeah.
What's another way to say that sounds more intelligent?
Self-discovery
film. It's a very nice self-discovery film. But yeah. I would watch it. I don't know if I'd watch it again anytime soon, but I would watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Would you watch it with your mom?
No.
No.
LOL, no.
Oh, come
on. I'd watch it with my dad, but I don't think this is something my mom would be able to stomach.
This
is.
I'm sorry. How many scenes do they show Mima's boobs?
Because there's the photography thing.
Every time I looked up from Paprika, they were.
Oh, that was
Mima's tits were all over the screen.
That wasn't just Mima's boobs, man.
That was everything. They do not.
In the photo shoot, it is straight up full body nudity going on in that photo shoot.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very mature film.
It is, it is a very mature film. In fact, I don't think I would watch this with my father now that I remember.
It's weird because before this, I thought Rin was mature.
Rin Namasane. Was very, very, very conspicuously placed. Everything that happened, I mean, obviously there was a lot of stress.
I just meant the overall themes, but this was like, hey, guess what? You're looking at her crotch right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the themes are probably a little bit more heavy in Rin. In this, though, the maybe two or three select scenes they've chosen to hit on, they hit on so well that it feels heavier.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's anything else you want to say?
You pretty much took the words right out of my mouth.
Awesome. Wow, perfect blue.
Really just
that
do
was
that.
Anyway, so now I have to do Paprika. This is a pretty difficult review to do, because this movie was truly... I'm not a stupid guy. I have a master's degree. Thank you. But this movie, I can't understand it!
Your master's degree isn't in Paprika. That's
it's not. It's not, okay? It's... I was thinking about the movie... What's that movie called? The new one with Leonardo DiCaprio? I was thinking about Inception the entire time I was watching this, because... The plot line of Paprika is that in the near future, there is a new psychotherapy treatment called PT that basically, through a device called the DC Mini, people are able to enter into people's dreams and explore their subconscious thoughts. So, I haven't seen Inception, but from what I've heard of it, that's kind of what I gather of it. But before the government can pass any bills regarding laws for it or anything like that, it gets stolen, and you know, the research facility is freaking out, and the person who stole it is basically using it for terrorism. So they're using it to you can essentially erase a person's personality by destroying their subconscious using their dreams. And
can you plant ideas in people's heads?
You probably could. I don't...
The Inception.
The movie's about a girl named Atsuko... Huh?
Sorry.
You
said
that's
it's
the Inception.
That's what Inception's about. Planting an idea in someone's head.
The movie's about a woman named Atsuko Chiba, who is kind of involved in the device's creation. And her alter ego, Paprika, who is very hot. By the way, I did appreciate Paprika. She was hot. And
did you get to see her boobs?
I don't think so. No. Nope, definitely not.
I guess not. Mitsugi would remember something like that.
But there is a scene towards the end of the movie where she gets filled up pretty good by a dude. But yeah, she gets filled up. What's wrong?
She was hungry.
Filled up.
Oh, felt up. I thought you said filled up. I was like, filled up with what?
So, as the alter ego Paprika, she basically goes in people's dreams and uses that as her persona inside of the dreams. And she attempts to unravel the mystery behind who the criminal is. And the other characters involve the man named Dr. Kosaku Tokita. He's this guy who's morbidly obese. The first scene you see him, he's basically stuck in an elevator, literally. He's stuck in the doors, just to give you an idea.
Wow.
But he's the creator. The problem with this anime is gorgeously animated. It basically looks like Spirited Away in quality in terms of how it looks. There's so many details in it, and it looks fantastic. It's got Satoshi Kon's character designs, and again, Satoshi Kon has played a lot of roles in the film. He was the director. He did the scenario writing, the screenplay writing, and because of that, you see a lot of Satoshi Kon in this movie. You can get right down to the way that the characters look. But the movie, I just feel like it wasn't presented in a consumable way. And when I say that, I mean that the average person watching it just isn't going to get what's going on. I think I was on track with the plot for about 15 minutes, and then for the last 85 minutes, I was truly struggling to understand what was happening. There'd be scenes where Paprika would be in a dream, and she'd be getting, like, chased, and there'd be this random shit happening, and then she'd wake up, and then they'd just be walking, like, through the hospital, and all of a sudden, something else random would happen that's impossible, like, it had to be a dream. And there'd be, like, 5 or 6 scenes of her waking up, and random, and it got to the point where there was basically no reality left towards the end of the movie. It starts out, you know, where you're in and out of the dreams, and it's really obvious, but by the end of the movie, you basically never leave the dream state.
It really does sound like Inception.
To the point where there's, like, giant people stomping on buildings and all kinds of
madness.
Yeah, I
never make it through this movie.
So it was really hard to follow. Like, I'm sure for somebody who understood it, like, oh, you're just stupid, you know, it was amazing.
Maybe it's something you have to watch, like, 4 or 5 times before it starts to sink
in. I
guess. But
and read the cheat notes online.
The cheat notes, yeah, the cliff notes, or spark notes if you're in high school. I didn't tell you.
Notes.
Yeah, monkey notes. But
it's a
good movie. People are going to enjoy it. I'm sure it's going to win awards and get acclaim. And I'm sure it already has because it came out in, what was it, 2006. Wow, came out a lot longer ago than I thought. But I just had a hard time with the presentability of it. And that might just be me, but I feel like I have a capable ability to follow storylines. You know, and it was just not. It was a pleasant film to watch, and it had good characters, but it was just very difficult to understand. I don't know. Everybody's gonna get a different reaction out of it. It's just one of those movies.
Yeah.
So, there is one more movie, though.
There is one more, and
definitely last but not least.
Yeah, we might have started with maybe the most acclaimed. Per se best, but as far as ready to watch, this one might take the cake. And of course, it is. I'm speaking of Tokyo Godfathers. It's a 92-minute runtime. Came out in 2003. And basically, the plot is on Christmas Eve, 3 homeless people in Tokyo. One of them is a middle-aged alcoholic man named Jin, and Jin became homeless because he essentially had too many gambling debts.
He's also an ex-bicycler.
Yeah, well, that's
yeah, like a professional bicycler.
Yeah, he claims to be a professional cyclist, but he had gambling debts, and so he left his wife and daughter to be homeless. That sounds really weird, but basically that's what happened. A high school girl, Miyuki, and Miyuki ran away from home. She's a senior high school student. And basically, her and her father had a family dispute, and she stabbed her father.
Oh,
and pretty much out of fear and shame, she ran away. And she hasn't allowed herself to go back home because she's afraid of basically what'll happen when she does.
Right.
And then, of course, a former drag queen, Hana. And Hana became homeless because, well, I'm not really sure why he's homeless.
He's really funny, though.
He's hysterical. But they were searching the dumpsters and trash bags for possible Christmas gifts for themselves.
Yeah.
And, on Christmas Eve. And they heard a baby crying. And they found the baby, and they weren't sure what to do with it. But Hana, because she couldn't have a baby of her own.
Yeah.
Vowed to take care of the abandoned baby girl. And so,
and they live in a tent in the park.
So they take it back to their tent in the park, and they're trying to do things to take care of this baby. And of course they do things like they spend like the $5 they have to help like buy supplies for the babies and things like that. And the realization sets in that 3 homeless people cannot properly raise a child. So they start out on this kind of quest, I guess you could say, to find the baby's mother. And along the way, you know, Miyuki's kind of dispute with her family has some, you know, resolvement, and you learn more about that, and then you learn about Hana's past. Like, you go to this drag queen bar, basically, where you meet Mother.
Oh my god, that scene is just ridiculous.
It is so funny. Should they get involved with the Yakuza and have, like, the baby kidnapped at one point? Like, it's like a roller coaster. There are so many things that, like, happen that are just ridiculous.
But the thing about the movie is that it's Christmas Eve, and, you know, they're trying to make Christmas nice by getting the baby back to its parents. But what you realize is that the baby, through an unusual circumstances, basically helps to reconcile the problems in a lot of these homeless people's lives. And right. That's the real Christmas that the baby gives to them, you know?
It sounds so awesome.
And it's really good. And it's Satoshi Kon's only work, in my opinion, that doesn't have like a psychological edge to it that makes it hard to gather.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. It's
very funny. There's a lot of just blunt slapstick humor, like Mitsuki said earlier about, you know, the whole, he's a drag queen and he tries to be a woman, but like every now and then the man comes out and he just punches somebody in the face or whatever. So you have that kind of slapstick humor, but at the same time, despite being very funny, it doesn't lose depth of characters.
Not at all.
It can flip like a switch from being like the funniest thing you're watching to like jerking at your heartstrings and things like that.
I love that mix.
So it's really well done. There's so much emotion that's in it. Of course, it's a holiday film, so you can cue it up this coming winter.
I love Christmas movies.
And it's just a great film. Good for anyone and everyone.
And like all of his movies, Satoshi Kon was the director, screenplay writer.
Original story,
character designer. I mean, the man does everything. He's superhuman.
I mean, as he said in his final goodbye, he likes to have his hand in everything.
Right.
And he likes to keep the project close to him. So, and it just shows in just the quality, and it's fantastically animated, like all of his things are. And it's just great. I mean, I don't know what more to say about it, because it's not psychological, and I don't want to ruin it, because I don't want to ruin the jokes.
They don't wake up one day to find out that they were never homeless?
No, they don't.
Thank God.
But I don't want to ruin any of the jokes. I don't want to be like that trailer.
Anyway, so we hope that you guys enjoyed experiencing a bit of Satoshi Kon this evening. You know, it's difficult to say goodbye to such a wonderful name in the industry, but
it's difficult to swallow that we're not going to have any more films from this man.
Well, except for Dream Machine.
Right, but I mean, aside from what has been created at this point, there will be no more. And that makes me sad, because he has produced some great works in a short period of time, and I can't imagine what he could have created if he had more.
His works, as well as him, as well as he, will be missed.
Yes.
Indeed. Very much.
Anyway, so, again, we are the Anime Addicts Anonymous Podcast, in case you forgot. And you can find us at www.aaapodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. If you type in Anime Addicts or Anime Podcast, you can find us. We're on Google, and I think we're always on the top page now of search results. So you just type in Anime Podcast, you can find us on Google. We're on the addnetwork.net and nerdnexus.com. Oh, and Facebook. Can't forget that.
Yes. And we have a Twitter account where we tweet sometimes.
Sometimes. But the ending theme today is Rotation, which is the main theme from Millennium Actress by the artist Susumu Hirasawa.
Take care, guys. We'll talk about something less depressing next time.
And
we promise.
Look forward to the 53rd episode.
Beginning of our third season. Oh yes. And look forward to that too.
Signing
look forward to it real hard.
Signing out. Peace.
Bye.